I'm coming strong, and I am a player. And that's why this show is called Trash Opinion. Hello, viewer. This is Trash with Trash Opinions, coming to you with my first ever video. In this video, I will be ranking, rating, and reviewing every single contestant ever on Survivor. Now, this is all my very personal, very biased, very trash opinions. So if I don't like a contestant that you like, or if I like somebody that you hate, just remember, I'm trash, and that you really shouldn't take people on the internet seriously. However, I would love to hear your thoughts in the comments, and I hope to build a fun community of debate about these fantastic and not-so-fantastic characters. First, I feel I need to explain my tier system. Up top, I have Queen. Queen is essentially my top five, and it's called Queen because, spoiler alert, all five top spots are taken by women. It's just how it worked out. Below, we have Favorite, which are contestants that I would consider in my top 50 or however many members of this tier we eventually get. Next up is Love, which are players where I wouldn't call them my favorites, but I still have a strong emotional attachment to them. After that, we have the Great tier, which is split up into three sub-tiers: entertaining, hilarious, and delightfully crazy. This is solely for variety, but they're still considered to be in the same tier of players. And then we have Deserved Better, which is for people who have had outside circumstances ruin their game and had potential to be great characters if whatever incident or incidents happened hadn't happened. This is not for people screwed over by game mechanics like a swap, for example. This is including, but not limited to, extreme cases of sexual harassment, sexism or racism, loss, really anything that can affect you deeply. These are essentially victims who are defined by their victimhood, sadly. Now after that, we have the Rootable tier. This is split into many parts because it's a huge tier. This is basically people who are just serviceable in terms of what they bring to the show. It's split into good player, underdog, mildly entertaining, cute, golden boy, and fun downfall. It's basically the throw them a bone tier. After that is Meh, which are the people I struggle to find anything to say about, or their total duds. We also have Didn't Get a Chance, which are for people who just didn't even get a chance to play the game. These are people like Wanda Shirk or Jonathan Libby, or maybe even people who were sick immediately, like Tanya Vance. They basically did not get a single chance to play the game. Now in the negative tiers, we have Annoying, which are for people I dislike without them being particularly egregious as people. And then there's Fuck You, which are for those egregious people. And then there's The Volcano, which is reserved for the worst of the worst, the bottom five, the Dan Spilo tier, essentially. Now, enough wasting time. Let's get into Borneo. Now, I want to reiterate first, I'm judging these people based on them as characters, not as, like, actual human beings. Unless I state otherwise, I am judging them solely as television characters, nothing more. Thank you, and enjoy the content. Sonia Christopher. Sonia was the first ever person voted out of Survivor, and there ain't too many first boots more beloved than her. She's the poster archetype of the cute old person, just absolutely delightful. I really, really loved her Bye Bye Blues cover.
Therapist version of Bye Bye Blues. If I can remember it, I've... Bye Bye Blues, thanks to Prozac. Bye Bye Blues, give me Paxil. Bells ring, birds sing. Sun is shining, no more whining. I live through...
It's a shame she barely got any content in that first episode outside of that extremely endearing song performance, though. Yeah, I believe I'm gonna throw her in cute.
We got a lot of lazy people, if y'all know the truth.
Can't do it all yourself.
You know, I asked Colleen to straighten this out for me, and here it is. It's the only thing she had to do today. She can't have lazy people.
B.B. Anderson. B.B. Anderson is definitely one of my favorites on the season, one of my favorite early boots of all time. He just argues with literally everyone and is a terrible player in a very fun way. He has this absurd idea of this huge shelter, and he wants it done right now. It doesn't matter if it's 120 degrees out, it needs to be built right now. He butts heads with everyone on the tribe and expects everyone to be as much as a workhorse as he is. He just won't accept any input from anyone else because they're not as old as him. He's just yelling at everyone. It's hilarious. Apparently, he also had this incident with production where BB wanted to quit, and he actually demanded a helicopter, and Mark Burnett, the executive producer himself, came down and said, sure, you can quit, and you can have a helicopter, but you have to say you quit on camera. Which he, for some reason, refuses to do, so he stayed on the island until he was voted off. He's a ridiculously petty man who leaves a huge first impression despite only being in two episodes. He's an old curmudgeon that is going straight into delightfully crazy.
I'm hungry. I think we're all pretty hungry. I've gone days when I've only had some fruit, but there's no prospect of having any food here. It's worse. I got two rats primed and ready to be cooked. It's dire.
Stacy Stillman. Stacy is super bland, despite getting a decent amount of attention, especially during her boot episode. The only interesting thing about her is that she technically created the First Alliance, but she didn't do anything with it, so who cares? And that after the show, she sued CBS, and that is what she's most famous for. You can Google the lawsuit if you want. It didn't amount into anything, so it's kind of pointless for me to explain it here. Anyway, I find Stacy to be pretty meh. She just really doesn't add much to the show.
At this point, I mean, we all like each other, so it's not like... I mean, it would almost even be easier if we didn't like each other, and I was like, I hate you! You're out of here! But we like each other, so it's like, I don't know.
Ramona Gray. I like Ramona despite her being a pretty boring character. She just isn't memorable. It's very easy to forget that she was even there. She mostly lay down in the shelter. Yeah, she was sick for the first few episodes, and then she started working a lot more when she realized she was on the chopping block, but as Jenna Lewis said, it was too little too late. I'm sorry, but Ramona is going into meh.
Kelly's got a serious boyfriend. Unless she tells me otherwise, that's a line I'm not going to cross.
I mean, I've gone 23 years without sex. I think you guys can go 7 weeks.
I want a year.
Oh, my God. You should try it. You should try it sometime. You might like it.
It's just funny. When
you might like I know you'll like it.
No, and then
you
I know just, I'm going to love it.
You'll come back.
It's a gift from God. There's no doubt, man.
Dirk Bean. Dirk is just a chode. Just a total chode. He doesn't do a single interesting thing. His luxury item is a freaking Bible, which Rudy hilariously remarks that he would only use it for toilet paper. Not only that, but he's just really weird towards Kelly in general. But hey, at least he balances out his creepiness by being super religious. And by being super religious, I mean he makes it his entire identity. Which is hilarious because he has a confessional where he talks about how all gays talk about is being gay. And it's a wonder how he's holding up with all those stones being thrown in that glass house he has. Now, I don't want to dogpile the guy for being Christian, but I will dogpile him for being annoying. There's a big difference. Mostly, though, he's just an incredibly dull character. I've heard him described as the only dud on this cast, and I would have to agree, he's easily the worst castaway. He just really doesn't have a personality beyond his faith, and being the Harry to Sean's Lloyd, he's in love with a man called God. Does that make him gay for God? You betcha. It's not enough for me to hate him. He's just pretty annoying.
Oh yeah.
What does that mean?
We're styling. What's up?
What
did you say
about?
Not sure.
Rat?
You said rat.
Joel Klug. Joel is just a big old guy, and he's only notable for being blamed for a joke he didn't even make. And then he got booted for it. Like Stacy, a lot of people seem to like Joel, but I don't see anything but a bland character. He really does nothing for me, and I consider him the most forgettable member of the cast. He's also just kind of a dick. He's edited to look like a chauvinist, and he's voted out based on that assumption. So I'm just going to put him in meh.
I wasn't there for the initial conversation. They were storytelling at night, I think, and I don't really believe that Jervis... Oh, were we not supposed to say who's in
Come on!
And you know what? You know what, Jervis? Right now is when they're going to play you saying the words.
Gretchen Cordy. Gretchen is so cute, and I'm upset she never got another chance to play, but I don't think she has it in her to betray anyone, so I don't know how she would fare on any other season. However, I will say if she manages to somehow get the Pagong together to, I guess Pagong the other alliance, and then I guess it's forever called a Takiing, in that scenario, she wins the season for sure. I think everyone on that tribe would be willing to take her to the end, and she beats everybody. However, for me at least, her claim to fame is going out on a 4-1-1-1-1-1-1-1 vote. It's insane. It's hilarious. The merge vote of Borneo is like going back to the 1920s NFL and seeing that most games ended up in ties or blowouts. It's absolutely wild. Gretchen is an incredibly helpful person in more ways than one and a real leader of Pagong. She tries really hard to talk some sense into BB, but BB will be BB. She has a great chance to win the season if they have any semblance of strategy. But alas, this is season one. We're 4-6 somehow. Fun downfall.
Could be. Who knows? There's something due any day. I will know right away, soon as it shows.
I can make him cannonball and down to the sky. Right in
the rose. The air is humming. And something great is coming.
I can't wait! Who knows?
Greg Buis. Greg is hilarious, and most of his confessionals hit differently after learning about how much he fucked with production on a daily basis. But even if you don't know about his behind-the-scenes shenanigans, he's still a fantastically entertaining character. He just has a great sense of humor about everything that's going on, and he's just a quip machine. He creates the Coconut Phone, which is a precursor to Shane's BlackBerry, but done 5 years prior.
Can you hear me? Yeah. I don't want to tell you exactly what it looks like. It's, just put it this way, we're all very excited to be here.
And it's hilarious how he will take calls on it, and the rest of the tribe will just be silent as he finishes his imaginary conversation. And he would just slow down production by taking calls on it during tribal council, and, like, making Jeff wait for him to finish his conversation to be able to, proceed with the vote out, which is just hilarious. There's been goofballs, but none that were also good at what they did and were the leader-like figures of their tribe. Him flirting with Richard is also extremely humorous. It sucks he couldn't return on Blood vs. Water with his sister, though. Speaking of his sister, that video from home sure was, something.
Mooka looka mau mau ping ping.
Greg's vote out is also iconic, his fake crying with Rudy going,
I believe him for a minute.
Greg.
No!
Take it.
And then his final tribal council question. Never has there been a more gutting and important question, such as pick a number between 1 and 10. Greg is just iconic, he is hilarious.
Yuli, we gotta put up with this for about 2 more weeks, and then we might kill him. Is that doing you a favor?
Joel thinks he's the All-American, and all of these physical challenges are just feeding his ego. Towards the ladies, he seems to be pretty condescending. Like, he has to explain everything so thoroughly that we just couldn't understand it without Joel. I don't see why he feels the need to treat us like we're children.
Jenna Lewis. Jenna is a good player compared to the rest. I feel like she proved that later on, but you can still see a semblance of somebody who can get along with pretty much anybody. She even got along with BB. I know she has this reputation of talking a lot, but she still has good social capital with most of the people on her tribe. Jenna also has some notable character moments, like her not getting her family's video on time is incredibly sad and probably the most memorable thing about her. Her naming the chickens breakfast, lunch, and dinner is also pretty hilarious, and so is the scene of her and Colleen mocking Sean's alphabet strategy by saying that they're going by Zoe and Zelda now. Jenna Lewis wasn't the best candidate for All-Stars, but I would still consider her mildly entertaining.
Sorry, Jenna, but man, you talk a lot.
Sean, I like Sean. Sean's a great guy, you know. But about Sean's alphabetical order, it's like my granddaddy used to say. If you want to be seen, stand up. If you want to be heard, speak up. And if you want to be appreciated, shut up.
Jervis Peterson. Jervis is just a fun character. His confessionals are usually memorable, and the line, if you want to be appreciated, shut up, is fantastic advice. Also an underrated player on the season. He really wanted to make alliances with people, and I think he had one with Joel. It just wasn't the vibe of the tribe, so he really decided against it. Jervis seems to be always cracking up the rest of his tribe, and he's more one of the more charismatic ones on the season.
How have I survived this long? I always said when I came here I was going to be the entertainer.
God, man. Glad you brought them.
Oh,
it adds a new dimension to island life.
The ocean, isn't it, man? I'm not trying to do anything shifty or shady. I'm just being me. And people like me because that's who I am.
Him beating Kelly in a rowing challenge when that's her freaking job is also hilarious. It's super cool, too, how they let him know that his kid was born, which is something that they never really did again. And they even gave him a nice cigar to go with it. But at the same time, it's like, wait, really? You skipped out on your kid's birth to be on some show? What if it flopped? What if the show totally sucked? It's season one. You don't know, dude. Anyway, I would put Jervis in entertaining. I like him. I'm glad he came back for Blood vs. Water, even though I would have preferred Greg. Jervis goes in entertaining.
I suck at trivia, but I love it, because I feel, you know, and I'm real slow at the buzzer, but you know what I was thinking before I went to bed last night? I was like, it's going to be just like a game show. This is going to be so cool. And then I was like, wait a minute, we're on a game show.
Colleen Haskell. I think Colleen is a great character with some fantastic confessionals.
How many times Rich opens his mouth and I just want to be like, oh, be quiet over there in the corner. You're not making any sense and you think you're so smart and you're just go home and go get your liposuction and go catch more fish because you're bugging me. You know, he thinks he's so above everybody and it's full of baloney, really.
She's just an adorable presence, and I love how she doesn't take the game seriously at all. She didn't want to be there, yet she comes close to winning the game if she makes it to the end. Like Greg, she has very realistic and down-to-earth reactions to everything going on without putting on that fake excitement, and it's incredibly endearing. Her fake showmance with Greg is also hilarious. They're an iconic duo, honestly.
When we go off, it's all about sex. It's all that's happening. It's a really passionate affair right now. Things are going great.
She's just very relatable and also incredibly cute. Like, just look at her. She's adorable, yet she's so apathetic. It's hilarious. The yell she makes when she wins the rope challenge is also endearing, and so is her screaming the words to 99 bottles of beer. It's funny that she didn't want to be on the show to begin with and clearly didn't want to be famous despite being a legit celebrity. And she's probably the most fascinating post-Survivor story, where she just didn't want to be in the public eye at all, and she just wasn't. She was an actress for a bit and reportedly seemed like she didn't want to be there, so it makes sense why she's now just living a quiet life with her family away from the public eye. I don't even think she has any social media. She's completely detached, and I respect that a lot. She's a fascinating anomaly in the Survivor lore. Colleen's the most rootable member of this cast. There's a reason she became America's sweetheart. She's a great character through and an, honestly an icon. She's definitely going and entertaining.
Play fair.
Sean, your role here.
Very nebulous. I don't know what I'm doing here. So, after, how long have we been here? 15, 16 days. I still haven't found my niche.
Dr. Sean Kniff. One of the most underrated quotes from Sean is, there's no good reason other than strategy to vote Gretchen off. It's so hilarious in hindsight. I almost dislike Dr. Sean, but I don't. His dodo edit and the entire idea of the alphabet strategy reaches so bad it's great territory. It's sort of brilliant considering all the Tagi members have names that are late in alphabetical order. Him trying to understand the gays and getting everything so wrong is so funny, but it makes him come off as such a dope.
I mean, I know you're not just homosexual. I know gay guys don't like to be called that because you're not homosexual. You're gay, you know, you're...
No, I'm homosexual. I mean, yeah. Do we not like to be called that?
No, because it just makes... No, if you classify them...
Super Bowl 2000 is also iconic as hell, so I can't say I don't like the guy. He's just a putz. It's hilarious how long it takes him to make this giant fucking fishing pole that catches no fish. His loved one visit with his dad is also super weird. The whole, oh, the captain is a big fan of the show and a big fan of you intro that Jeff gives is just so bizarre for a show in its first season. And then it's like, oh, it's his dad. Oh, look. How clueless his dad is when Sue Hawk is asking him questions about current events and the results to sports games and the outside world in general is also one of my favorite scenes in the entire season. I think I'd be doing that too. Hey, did the Chiefs win? Who won Hell's Kitchen? Sean Kniff is just trying to come off as a likable guy, but instead he just comes off as a doofus. He only survives to the final 10 just because he served no threat whatsoever to the main Taggi Alliance, so they just let him coast despite being pretty useless to them. He's pretty underrated in his badness, honestly, but he can be pretty funny sometimes, and I'll admit he has his moments. He is a strange case where he wanted to come off as likable just because he wanted to use Survivor as a way to catapult his own career and getting his own show. So that's why his entire gameplay is based on being likable, which just makes him an odd case. If he was on any other season, he probably would have the sense to flip over to Pagong, being that he was clearly on the bottom from the start. But Sean Kniff is Sean Kniff. He's mildly entertaining.
But I often give a bad first impression sometimes.
There's nothing wrong with the rat. All a rat is a squirrel without a fuzzy tail.
Susan Hawk. I fucking love Sue Hawk. She starts off the season arguing with Richard over his corporate approach to leading the tribe, which is what, sitting on your hands and doing nothing while everyone else works? Probably.
I'm a redneck, and I don't know corporate world at all. And corporate world ain't gonna work out here in the bush.
Sue is brash, but lovable. She's great television and one of the best characters of the old school era. The entire scene of her trying to find out information about the outside world through Sean's totally clueless father is hilarious, and I love her voice just interjecting into conversations with nothing helpful.
Don't classify people sexual.
It's a lifestyle.
Right. And,
Actually, for him to come and visit the camp was sort of cool, but he didn't know anything.
So that war over in Russia sort of mellowed out.
What?
They had the one there at the end.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
We're like, what's going on in the world? You didn't know none of that.
Really?
What about the college playoffs? Who won?
Yeah, wait a minute.
Duke?
No.
Deanna?
No. Who the hell won? See, I'm not really a sportsman.
Her bluntness on a show about being fake is so appreciated.
Susan, straight up, is there an alliance?
No. Do you think I'm going to come out and say, oh yeah, we got four of us voting up against all you guys. We're going to knock you all down to the end. Come on. Sean sits there for 5 hours and builds a super pole and doesn't catch anything with it. I told him it was a waste of time. Oh no, it's not a waste of time. Well, did you catch any fish? No.
I love how she will just start arguments with people just because she has a need to tell it how it is. She trolls Richard by catching a fish and stepping on his provider toes.
We caught a fish today, finally. Yeah, it feels so good. Feels so accomplished now. I think it might bother him. In a way, I hope it does. I hope it bugs him.
She's a victim of a top 10 Watch Mojo anime betrayals when Kelly betrays her out of nowhere and votes her out at Final Four instead of just seeing what happens at a tie.
Right now, I don't trust anybody except for Kelly. I trust Kelly 100%. 100%. She trusts me the same. We're like sisters. And it'll be 20 years come this Easter that I lost my best friend. So coming across Kelly, somebody I can hang with, it's so long. I ain't gonna f*** her. I'm not burning her.
Sue.
The snakes and rats speech is also iconic as hell, albeit a little overrated, but still a very important moment of the show.
I plead to the jury tonight. This island is pretty much full of only two things. Snakes and rats. And in the end of Mother Nature, we have Richard the snake, who knowingly went after prey, and Kelly, who turned into the rat that ran around like the rats do on this island, trying to run from the snake. I feel we owe it to the island's spirits that we have learned to come to know, to let it be in the end the way Mother Nature intended it to be, for the snake to eat the rat.
Sue comes out of this season as my favorite OG castaway. She's surprisingly strategic and does not fit the mold of the stereotypical dumb redneck like people judge her as. I would argue she's second to Richard when it comes to who played the best game, and it's wild seeing how quickly Sue just got it. Sue is totally going in love.
The hardest part is hanging around with all these young kids. I don't even know what MTV means, you know? And I'm used to being in the military, and one guy stands up and gives an order, and there's no back talk. If they listened to me, they'd all have haircuts and everything else, you know? We'd be in formation in the morning and all that kind of stuff, but they're not going to do that. I got to fit in, not them. You know, there's more of them than there is of me.
Rudy Bosch. Rudy Bosch is my favorite homophobe of all time. When I first heard the term lovable homophobe used to describe Rudy, I was skeptical. How could a homophobe be lovable? By being Rudy, that's how. Everything that comes out of this man's mouth is goddamn gold, and you can tell none of his questionable views come from a place of hate. He's just a silent generation military lifer being thrust into this world of liberals and gays. You don't grow up in World War II times, spend your entire life in the military, and then become open-minded. It's not how it works, unfortunately. I wish it did, but it doesn't. But it's leaning more towards Hank Hill than Cotton Hill, if you catch what I mean. They cast them to be on the same tribe as the gay dude to start drama, and it's hilarious how they became good friends on the island, and not in a homosexual way, as Rudy needed to reinforce for some reason. He's one of the most quotable castaways ever, and it's so much fun to impersonate him.
You know, he's fat, but he's good. Me and Richard got to be pretty good friends. Not in a homosexual way, that's for sure. It's funny to me that a guy would read the Bible out here. The only reason I'd bring a Bible is if... I mean, I'm religious, too, if I needed toilet paper. When I go home, my wife asks me about who was with you. I'll say a queer that ran around bare ass half of the time, for one thing. Got a clue last night, and it says you can use your brain, not your muscles, which is good news. Not that my brain's any good, but... I'd rather use that than my muscles, because the muscles hurt now.
There's a reason he's one of the most beloved Survivor castaways of all time. He's a great player, and it was brilliant how he realized he needed to adapt to everyone else and not the other way around. And because of that, he survives all the way to the final three when he really should have been the third boot. He's the opposite of a Dirk or a Roger Sexton later down in the series. We'll talk about him, who didn't shut up about his political or religious views. Rudy kept his mouth shut, which is Survivor 101. Don't talk about religion or politics. Rudy's way smarter than he lets on, and he's way past the point of giving a shit, which I love. He may not say it on the island, but he sure as hell will say it in confessionals. Rudy is probably the most honest person ever on Survivor. The dude just gave you the straight-up truth every single time you asked him something. I love how his answer to every question during the Blair Witch Challenge is, I don't know. Hilariously, at the reunion, when he's asked if his friendship with Richard changed his views on same-sex relationship, he replies with, not really. He doesn't sugarcoat anything, and it's something I really appreciate so much in a TV character where mostly everyone is full of shit. Rudy is a goddamn treasure who was going in love.
Stacy came up to me, I think he likes you, you know, I was just like, oh, great. You know, I didn't come out here for that. You know, we don't need that. I think he's really sexually frustrated. I'm obviously not a virgin, but if he, that's how he wants to live his life, that's cool. You don't meet too many 23-year-old guys who are virgins.
Kelly Wigglesworth. Now, this is where people are going to get upset with me. I know a lot of people love Kelly, but I never did. I always found her pretty bland despite having an insane amount of content. Like, I'm talking, like, one of the most visible survivors of all time. But people do love her. I will admit that her Challenge Beast run was pretty badass, but the fact that she even put herself into a position where she even needed an immunity run was asinine. She just talks a bunch of shit on her alliance to the enemy for no reason, and then it comes back to Sue, and her whole game is blown up at that point, and it's like, why did you even do that to yourself? And then she leaves her, like, she openly just talks about leaving her alliance. And it's like, Kelly, what are you doing? And then she stabs her only ally in the game in the back, once again, for no reason. There's no reason why she wouldn't just go to a tiebreaker to try and save Sue. It was the dumbest move. She got rid of the only person she beats out of the final four to the benefit of Rich's game and not hers. It's ridiculous. But even though her gameplay sucked, she was way more of a deceptive liar than Richard ever was. Richard never betrayed anyone, and it's a wonder why people liked Richard more than her. She was not looked at as a good person by the jury. If anything, the snakes and rats speech from Sue helped her gain a couple sympathy votes. At least that's what Colleen did, allegedly. Kelly just never did anything for me. However, she's too iconic to call man. That would be unfair. I'm just gonna throw her into Golden Boy since that's essentially what she is, even though she's a woman. Golden Boy is not, specific to just men here. But yeah, that's where she goes.
I know Jarvis can't swim, so my guess is that they're going to put him in the boat rowing, which is cool for me because I could beat him any day of the week.
No, get up here!
That's it, don't do it!
I got beat by a guy who can't even swim.
The problem with having no conversation whatsoever or lots of people talking about different things is that nobody's working toward a particular goal. Not the silly little stuff about, oh, who's going to sleep where, what are we going to do, but why are we here? And what's the point? And if we don't...
Oh, I figured
set up
that out before I come here.
For you.
But you haven't?
And I have for me, but we haven't for us. And for the next 7 ejections, 21 days, we have to function together or we fail.
People-wise, it'll be a little more challenging. But I've got the million-dollar check written already. I mean, I'm the winner. And it's that kind of cocky attitude that makes people really hate your guts.
Richard Hatch. Ah, the man, the myth, the legend. Richard is a great narrator. He's entertaining all throughout the season. He has one of the greatest winner quotes of all time in I Already Have the Check for the $1 Million. And he is obviously super iconic. From the first episode, him sitting in a tree and lording over everyone is a great visual that sets up how the rest of the season will play out. I mean, it's terrible gameplay, but it's great TV. He creates the foundation of what you need to survive Survivor.
If the Alliance were to break down and something else happened that I wasn't aware of, I would shake those people's hands and say, congratulations, you know, brilliant, good job, you got it, because you fooled me.
However, he is very lucky he was on a tribe full of people not savvy enough to recognize him as the biggest threat early on. He's one of the most entertaining winners of all time, too. It's a fascinating watch from start to finish. He walks around naked, which is what he's most famous for, and it's also really bad gameplay.
It's funny when I hear, how come you're naked all the time? I'm naked less than 1% of the time. I'd like to be naked all the time. That would be smarter in this 100-degree weather.
Rich is naked.
Is he naked?
He walks around naked quite a bit. I think it probably bugs some of the guys.
Seems kind of childish and immature to me and kind of grandstanding and walking around on national TV.
Then your life, my life, different things. Who cares? Something like that.
He runs around pretty often with clothes on and he don't think nothing of it.
Peachy. I couldn't care less whether guys or girls are around. It doesn't make any difference.
Is there any horny gay man out there that want a horny guy in return? I know one.
Naked isn't sexual to me, and it doesn't... I don't think of it that way. It doesn't faze me that way. So, no, I'm pretty comfortable naked.
Richard is not a perfect winner by any means, but he just happens to be the most strategic mind on a season full of literal noobs. He is absolutely vulnerable at Final 8 and almost gets voted out, but gets saved by Kelly voting for Sean for whatever reason and Sean voting Jay for Jenna. And then he's vulnerable at Final 7, but they can't get an alliance together. Richard is just really lucky to last as long as he did. He does not repeat this on any other season for sure. However, Richard winning over Kelly was the best thing that could have happened. He really set the stage for Survivor being a game of cunning and social strategy rather than just challenge prowess.
This game is about a lot of different things, and one of those things is mental strategy. And I thought to myself, it's doubtful that I would outlast Kelly, and it doesn't mean I'm giving up $1 million necessarily.
How come?
It means that whoever is immune has to pick between
the other two people. Each of them could 50-50 pick me. It's all a game of odds, and who knows what somebody's going to actually do.
100% going in entertaining. One of the most entertaining winners of all time.
The winner of the first Survivor competition is Rich. Congratulations, Rich.
Now, Borneo is a fantastic introduction to the series. It gives us mostly gold when it comes to characters. They really knew how to cast on this season. Rewatching it as a Survivor fan may be a little rough due to how different it is from every other season, but it has this quaint charm to it. Rudy and Sue are all-time classic characters. Richard is great on this season and a fantastic first winner. And the rest of the cast, outside of a couple duds here and there, really bring their A-game to this first season. Weirdly enough, there's not a single player on this season who returned more than once. Richard, Sue, Rudy, Jenna Lewis, Jervis, and Kelly Wigglesworth would all make returns, but be done after only their one return. It's a shame, since it really is a great cast. Next, we are going to be doing the Australian Outback, a season I have mixed feelings on. It's super iconic, but it's also super dull, and I think most people agree with that, but it should be fun. It has a lot of great characters. Thank you so much if you made it to the end, and I plan on continuing this series until the current day of Survivor, Survivor 46, and yeah, it should be a fun series to do. If you are interested in seeing the rest of it, just hit subscribe, you know. Should be easy to do. I think you should know what to do. It's YouTube. Everybody knows YouTube. But, yeah. Hopefully I'll see you there. Goodbye. Thank you. This is Trash. This is Trash Opinions.
You take one down, you press it around, 70 or 90.